News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. With parts of Alabama had snow yesterday. I mean, it was 73 when I woke up yesterday morning, and it just was a very, very cold reality of a day. Some mid-state and upper state actually had snow flurries, I believe. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking. So who all did receive snow yesterday?
I don't think it's any.
CBS 42 has some images up where it looks like some pretty good coverage.
Really?
In parts of the state. Yeah, they see snow in West Birmingham. Look at this picture of someone's pooch standing on some snow.
That's a lot of snow on the
yeah, it's pretty. I mean,
stuck on a grass lawn. There.
Yeah. So is that? I mean, I guess that is image from yesterday. So there was quite a bit of snow. They have it over at CBS42.com. Not cold enough here for snow, but we did hit the freezing mark in some locations around here.
We had a record
this morning.
Record low this morning of 32 or 31.
Mark in West Mobile says, friend of mine was camping in DeSoto yesterday, and they saw some accumulation. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, that's where I would expect it. That's a pretty mountainous area, DeSoto State Park, right? That's in the Birmingham area, probably Huntsville or up in the Shoals. Might have got a little snow up there. The weather, again, so we had a record low this morning, too, but it's going to quickly get a whole lot better, and it's just in time for a couple of events. The Wharf Boat Show is, and I'm so happy for those outdoor events that are, you know, signature events too. Wharf Boat Show is a lot of fun. It's the weather's going to be perfect down there at the wharf with highs. Looks like near 80 degrees, 75 to 80 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's a 3-day event. Also in Fairhope, they've got the Fairhope Arts and Crafts Festival, great weather. 70th Fairhope Arts and Crafts Festival.
So nice.
Added a long time. There's a lot of people that worked really hard to make that happen. And there's a lot of logistics. And you were talking about the years when the weather just was the exact opposite of what you would want.
Yeah.
For, you know, at least a day or two. It's when you have a 3-day event, you can have a nice day, and you can have a rough day on Saturday or Sunday. But
yeah,
right now it looks like all things are. Look like they're going to be great weather for all three of the days.
And it is interesting, too. Had that story earlier about the scammers taking advantage of the Fairhope Arts and Crafts Festival. I mean, nothing is safe. And they said that there are, this is from our news partners at WKRG, with the festival coming up this weekend, Fairhope Arts and Crafts. Officials say they've got numerous calls about people online posing as festival organizers and posting false information. Let's see. This is, I guess, one of the organizers, Thetford, in the WKRG story says, even the Fairhope Police Department has let us know of different scams going on with people trying to sell booths, sell entries, sell food vendor applications. That's really disheartening because the whole community worked so hard to put this on. They say that artist vendor booths have been fully booked for months now, and organizers are warning community members to be wary of anyone claiming that there are still spots available. Quote, if you see anything online accepting applications, just know that is not true. We are totally full, have a full wait list, and we're excited to have a really full show this year. And it's free admission for those who are attending. But how many people have fallen for this? Were they, thinking that that they're paying for a spot that is not actually there?
Yeah, the money's not going to the Fairhope.
Going to some scammer.
Right. So I'm wondering in what was talking, you know, it's pretty broad category online scamming, but did they actually create kind of a website that mirrors the Fairhope
Arts?
Good question. How were they able to get people's attention?
They were probably hopping on some of those Facebook groups, I would imagine.
Okay.
You can imagine which ones. I don't want to, like, speculate. Some kind of Fairhope group or Arts and Craft Festival group and people posting in there. I imagine that's what's happening, but nothing is safe anymore, I guess.
I wonder if they can be nabbed, if they can get caught, you know. Don't ask me to solve a cybercrime, okay? You know better than that, but maybe somebody can.
Yeah, well, it seems that we have some groups down here who are really good at solving cyber crimes. Mm. And far too often, it's the most despicable of the cyber crimes that we're talking about here with exploitation of minors. But doesn't it seem that they're arresting people just left and right on a lot of these online charges? So I don't know if they're able to kind of hunt someone down through the internet and figure out who's been scamming these folks, but make sure you don't fall for it. Also, I was thinking, you know, you've been talking so much about the boat show coming up, and you and I have been personally, you know, really thinking about going down and going in on a yacht together, buying a yacht. So we need a name for our yacht. And maybe some folks can help us out on the text line, 251-343-0106, Dan and Dalton's Yacht. Maybe what the name of that yacht should be.
How quickly is Dumb and Dumber going to end up on the text line, I'm wondering. That's the kind of false uncle that I am for the girls. I'm kind of a fake uncle, but I want them to have the best.
Yeah.
So I'm like, look, I don't have little ones like you have at your house. They're endearing and they're sweet and they're kind and they deserve a boat. So why don't Dalton and I go in? Look, I know Coxie pretty well. He can probably get us a deal.
Probably, yeah.
And so let's go ahead and secure something so the girls can live a life of leisure on the water. And then, like you say, what's the name of Dan and Dalton's boat? That's a good question.
We'll work on that and come up with some names. And yeah, we're getting a lot of images in from some of you who had family, or maybe you yourself yesterday were in parts of the state that did get some of the snow. This texter sent us a picture of pretty good coverage on the ground south of Huntsville. Ben, I think maybe sent an image, but said friend of mine yesterday in Birmingham, so some snow there. Texter Jeff from Fairhope said Huntsville had a dusting. Oldest daughter lives up there and sent me a picture. So, yeah, quite a bit of snow across the state. Looking at some state news, which we will in this hour, and a lot to discuss there, but also internationally in the latest from the war in Iran. And the big news this morning coming from Israel, who says that they got the new top guy in Iran.
Yeah, the guy that's been quoted recently in some of our stories about Iran. So he was, you know, high enough up the chain where he was speaking for the country and its interests. So that's somebody of note.
Yeah, so it's not the new supreme leader, and we're not sure if the new supreme leader is alive or dead, according to President Trump, but the national security chief for Iran. And Israel said with overnight airstrikes, Ali Larijani is now deceased. And if that becomes confirmed, the Guardian says that would mark one of the most devastating blows yet to Iran's leadership during the escalating war. Iranian officials haven't confirmed his death. Israel's defense minister also says that a separate strike killed a top paramilitary commander and that this was another coordinated effort to continue to dismantle Iran's power structure. So Larijani was a central figure in both Iran's political and military strategy. He had been leading wartime decision-making and previously played a key role in nuclear negotiations.
Huh.
Just yesterday, the reports were that this Larijani had sent a letter to the Gulf states saying,
why aren't you on our side?
Yeah, the Muslim world needs to stick together was kind of his message to them. And, of course, this comes after the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei was killed day one, and then so many in that leadership class died either with him or right after he did.
Yeah, the numbers are between like 50 and 75 at this point of top Iranian hierarchy that were have been eliminated.
No longer on this world.
And we don't know about his son.
Mm-hmm.
We know he might be gay.
That was, report yesterday.
Weird story yesterday from the New York Post. Like, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, and did anyone ever pick that story up beyond the New York Post? I mean, when you and I were doing some extra digging after the initial shock report yesterday, which we immediately broadcast. The only people that had it was the Times of India, which they'll post anything.
Right. There was some very just sketchy news outlets that picked up on it. One actually took it and then kind of rewrote it for their own design, talking about Trump's laughter like they talk about Trump's weird reaction to the news.
I guess many of the other news organizations did pick that up because they used the picture of Trump laughing at the podium, and you don't see him laughing very much.
No.
Usually he's the kind of comedian who doesn't laugh at his own or anyone else's jokes.
You see the audience behind him cackling, but not him.
So they said that he laughed when he got that news, but there were reports that the son, the new supreme leader, as it were, had been taken to Moscow after being injured in those early airstrikes, and that he underwent emergency surgery there. But again, that's something that has not been confirmed, which is pretty crazy. If they were able to get him out of Iran and all the way to Moscow.
Well, here's what's crazy. He's the most important man in the country right now, and he's not been seen or heard from.
Mm.
So that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Don't you think that they would go out of their way to make sure that, well, here he is.
Yeah.
They're like under the breath of saying, he might be gay, but here he is. But they haven't even done that.
Really good show last night from JY, also John Young, Mr. Mobile, who I think did a great job. He brought some veterans on the air with him to talk about what life was like for them serving in the Middle East and what it's like for them now.
Wow.
And what that kind of job, you know, working during wartime as a soldier, fighting, what that actually means. And I think one of his best lines last night was, we talk about the boots on the ground. Those boots are filled with, you know, people, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Feet that of real people that we know. And it really affects them, and to not really take something like that so lightly. I thought he had a great show on that. And then Joe Pags afterward as well, who played a lot of audio from Trump yesterday with his back and forth with a lot of the European nations about getting help in the Strait of Hormuz. I think it's interesting, too, Japan, one of the countries he is requesting most that needs to come out and help clear the strait. China doesn't seem like they're ready to get off their butts to help out with this, and that makes sense, of course. But what do you make of the NATO allies completely, basically giving Trump a cold shoulder? Germany, the most, who said, this isn't our problem.
Yeah, like, it's not a NATO problem.
It's not a NATO problem, and we're not going to help out. The UK seems to be willing, at least, to entertain the idea of helping to clear the strait, but they more or less said, not until the fighting ends, and then we'll maybe get involved in trying to clear that out. But Trump very upset with these NATO countries. And then you have some Americans who are saying, listen, he kind of brought that on himself, the way he's been treating them recently.
Yep.
I was reading a Wall Street article, maybe it was Wall Street Journal, might have been Fox, something like that, but that these countries aren't responding the same way they were to Trump last year when he was requesting that they increase their military spending to 5% of the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty quick to act there, and it seems like his leverage was a little more useful last year, and that maybe the way he's been going about things with these NATO countries isn't working as smoothly now.
Well, the risks are higher. You know, that's those are numbers, those are dollars, and they're like, you know what, we've been negligent. Okay, we'll do that. And that was after the bombing of the nuclear site.
Yeah, Fordow.
He made his way right over to Europe right after that, and they were kissing his ring, if you remember, right?
Mm, yes.
So they took it and went with it. Now time is, time has moved on, and they're looking at the risk assessment right now, and they're probably in a way thinking until it really begins to affect us, you know, Trump got America in this war. Now, for the world's benefit, I would say, I really believe that. I think that Trump is looking at this to benefit the world overall. This, mm-hmm. And, you know, talking with Jared Hudson, too, who's going to be, who is a candidate for Senate, had a chance to have breakfast with him the other day. You know, he's a veteran, obviously. He was a former Navy SEAL. He and Zach worked together in Afghanistan.
Mm.
So he sees, talk about his service, but he's not done serving, basically. He's somebody that continues to do a military, well, I would say military, but certainly law enforcement work here in the United States now, and he wants to run for Senate. He's got a very interesting platform, by the way. But just the idea that we are there now, people are talking about being a forever war. That's one of the big boots on the ground, forever war. Those are the things people keep talking about. And in his way of thinking, I would agree. He said, we're ending a forever war. We're ending a war that's been going on forever with Iran. And I think that's really the fact right there. They've been a menace in the world and to Americans and to American interests and American lives for years, decades.
But what does that end look like?
I know.
When is it over?
Right.
And, so, and can it be ended?
These are all good questions. I'm still betting on America. 821, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, 826 on Mobile Mornings. To the text line we go, 251-343-0106. Also, if you want to give the show a call.
Yeah, Cheese Wagon let us know. Aldot has closed the Dolly Parton Bridge northbound. Traffic is being diverted off 165 Bay Bridge Road to, or let's see, I-65 Bay Bridge Road to Baldwin County to get around. So Dolly Parton Bridge northbound closed, working you through detours this morning. That is because of a fire at 2 a.m. this morning. So I don't know if that created structural issues or what exactly it is. But
remember that one time there was that bad accident there that did create some structural issues because of a fire on the bridge? They get involved. I don't remember exactly, but it might have been a car and a truck. But the fire actually did. It was over the Dolly Parton Bridge, but you were still on part of the you know, over water. It's part of that cement that wasn't on hard ground, and it actually damaged part of that structure.
It's not fun getting stuck on that bridge or really anywhere, but when you're stuck on a bridge, and that's what happened to us a few years back. We were leaving to go to Birmingham for a family vacation. I guess it would have been May or maybe late July, and we were like maybe the 10th car to have to stop because the roadway northbound was completely closed, and then ended up waiting out there on the bridge for a good 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Folks were outside of their vehicles fishing, and it's no fun.
You were on the bridge.
Yeah, wow. On the bridge for that long. And many of you this morning have been dealing with the exact same thing. Jay Bird has a yacht name for us, recommendation. Yeah. If we go down and buy that boat, we've been talking about it. The boat show this
weekend.
I'm
doing it for the girls.
That's right.
You know, I'm not really... I'll take it out every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, you could go the Mike Gallagher route and call it Daddy Warbucks or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
The old boat. So Jay Bird says name it Smokey and the Bandit. I like that. A lot of suggestions for some form of double D with our names, Dan and Dalton.
Yeah, that seemed to catch fire a couple of years ago.
Double D's on the C's, Jason says. Someone said 7 second delay. Is a name. Now, we've also been
two
talking...
Two boobs on a boat. Did somebody say that?
Two boobs on a boat. That's a pretty good one.
Referring to us not, you know, being dum-dums.
Houndstooth. So we were talking about these scammers, too. He said, I had a scammer call me with the caller ID saying it was my bank.
Read through this. This is frightening.
He said, calling me with caller ID saying it was my bank, that I had charges on my debit card in Houston, Texas. And then said the people were trying to get a Cash App loan of $9,000 in my name. Houndstooth said, boy, they had me going for about 13 minutes, but they wanted me to send them $9,000 on that Cash App to verify it was me, but it wouldn't be charged to my account. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks what was going on. Said the number they called from was Wells Fargo's phone number.
That's something.
Then I cussed them out and hung up. They had me sending verification codes. It was pretty sophisticated. I don't know if, I'm sure I've fallen for one scam or another over the years, but when you do know that you've fallen or really even almost fallen for a scam, there's an embarrassment factor to it too, and you feel, you know, like you're at fault for falling for it. But these scams are so sophisticated, and if they hit you in the right emotion, you can really fall for it.
That's what they're banking on.
That's right. We'll be right back after the news right here on Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
835 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan and Dalton on the text line. You're telling us what to name our yacht. That's very nice of you. 251-343-0106. So we might just do it. We might head to the boat show, talk to Cox, get kind of an inside deal. Mm-hmm. You know, 27 years of doing football with the guy, he's going to give me a good price on a boat, don't you think?
Or you would think
find,
so.
Find somebody who will. He's just kind of the administrator, promoter over the whole event. It's not like he's selling boats himself, but he knows the people who are doing it. So I think, you know, we pull the trigger, we get a boat. I can use it every now and then, but mostly be for you and the girls.
Yeah. Well, we could just broadcast from it and sail That'd the world, nice. Right? Ken says we should name the boat Thanks, Dan. Like what Dr. Bill says every morning as we sign off. Dirt Digger says boat name Deep Sea DSD, Deep Sea Delight equals Dan Sean Dalton, he says.
Oh.
He also said he always sets folks up on St. Pathetic's Day, as he, I guess, calls St. Patrick's Day, and he would wear the green underwear. So they think that they've got him cornered, Dirt Digger here, and they get ready to pinch him because he's not wearing green.
Then he nearly exposes himself.
then he nearly exposes himself.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
No, see, I actually do have green
on. Got green underwear.
You don't have to pinch me. 251-343-0106. That is the number. And, you know, they put out the, I guess a month or two ago, we saw the new classifications next year from the AHSAA with the independent schools set up in two classes, and then all of the state's public schools now class 1A through 6A.
Right.
And we had so much of a discussion about, you know, the travel times for a lot of these teams now for
region
play.
It's just a disaster.
Or some long running rivalry games, especially in our part of the state where it was more common, I would say, like the McGill Murphy game, no longer because it's too difficult to make a non region game like that happen.
I don't know, by the way, if there's any region of the state that was more acutely affected by all this than us.
No, I don't think there was more of a mixture.
Yeah, we have private schools who for years have competed, some of them not as quite as long, but as long as I've known, for so 27 years of doing it, and Zach played 4 years at McGill, you know, certainly McGill's been playing public schools their whole existence, if that's the 20s or 30s or whatever. St. Paul's has been playing against public schools for a long time.
Yeah.
UMS Wright has played, and they've been really... And spirited, highly spirited games. UMass Wright Williamson, they get after it.
Well, and even some of the more recent converts, I guess if you want to call it that, of schools that left the AISA. Yeah, those were teams I was playing against in high school. Cottage Hill, Faith Academy, and Mobile Christian, they all made the move about 15 years ago. I guess a little longer than that at this point. Probably... Yeah, about 18 years ago, those three schools made the switch.
It's hard to imagine it's been that long. I remember when Faith Academy and Mobile Christian made that move. It seemed like it wasn't that long ago, but I guess it was.
And it was a long road for those schools, too, to see some good success.
Yeah.
And maybe Faith got better quicker than the other two schools, but they have since then seen success, all three of them, Faith, Cottage Hill, and Mobile Christian. So to switch it back the way they have, I was wondering... And just to kind of lay the timeline out for you, I'm setting this up because there was legislation, or is legislation, in the Alabama House right now dealing with all of this, but I'm wondering what the point even is now for this legislation. So just to kind of take your timeline back to the beginning of the football season last year. So the CHOOSE Act passes the state legislature. Last year was the first year, or I guess this technically this school year, which we're in the spring semester, was the first that people could take advantage of school choice.
The money following the student rather than, right? That's the way that works.
Right. And they have limits for these first 2 years to where you either have to have a child with a certain kind of learning disability or make as a household less money than three times the federal poverty line, I guess, is kind of what it was. So it's not open for everyone, but this was the first school year that school choice went into effect in some form or fashion. The AHSAA, for some stupid reason, wait until football begins and then let everyone know that they are going to suspend players, right?
Yeah,
that
you cannot transfer using school choice or
the
money,
CHOOSE Act,
the CHOOSE Act, and play.
They were saying you had to take a year off.
Right.
And that they were going to enforce that rule. So pretty much immediately, you had schools wondering, hey, I have a game coming up Friday. What's going to happen if I play so-and-so?
Yeah.
Am I going to be hit with a forfeit down the line that might keep me out of the playoffs? Do I need to just keep this player out? So you had the governor, Ivy, And was it Ledbetter kind of leading the charge on the Politico side of things and pushing back against the HSAA? You end up having this lawsuit, and they...
That allowed the people, the kids to at least play.
Yeah, they were given the ability to play while the courts figured things out.
Yeah.
And so fast forward towards the end of the season, and these... The state still fighting it out with the HSAA. You have this power grab, it appears.
Remember they had the meeting with private schools only up in Montgomery? That we were all like, what's going on here? Because I think that your school had a representative going to it as well. As
yeah, I think.
McGill's and Cottage Hill.
All of the private schools.
All the private schools around the state had a meeting in Montgomery. Okay, so
and that's as legislation, they were getting ready to file a lot of this legislation that would basically take the HSAA out of the position to make that call.
Mm-hmm.
So then the HSAA says, actually, here's how we're going to do things. We've had some good discussions with some of these state legislators and the private schools, and we're just going to break everybody off. And the private schools will have their own regions and playoffs. The public schools, same thing, their own regions and playoffs. And if they want to play non-region games against each other, they will allow that to happen.
That's their business.
And that settled it, I guess, for much of the state. I think down here in Southwest Alabama, we still have a real problem with it just because of the way it changed so many schedules and so many of these rivalry games.
You've got, for instance, you just have a private school in Mobile, and in their region, if you want to, is it so-called regions, I guess, they've got...
In Montgomery, right?
Or school in Montgomery, or a school in the Wiregrass, or a school like you got to be kidding, or like in Dothan, you would have to travel to Dothan for like a JV basketball game, or a basketball game that starts at 7 at night,
which is a lot more like it was for me in high school in the AISA, just because there were so few schools
that
the regions were all around.
You weren't being punished for that, unintended or intended consequences, I don't know, because I think the people that voted on this don't really care about the private schools anyway, so they're kind of sticking it to them a little bit. That's my point of view.
So I say all of that to say, you know, why does this legislation from Danny Garrett even matter at this point? And Alabama Daily News has this story, a bill filed in the Alabama House would allow families using the state's Choose Act education savings accounts to sue if an athletic association denies a student eligibility solely because they participate in the program. The bill would create an enforcement mechanism for a provision in the Choose Act stating that students' athletic eligibility should not be impacted, and they're expecting this to get its first vote in the House Education Budget Committee tomorrow. So again, the bill would allow a Choose Act participant to seek an injunction or damages against an athletic association that restricts participation based on the Choose Act status. But what's the point now?
An athletic association. There's one athletic association.
there's
the Alabama High School Athletic Association.
There's issue here. The AISA is not even in the mix. The AHSAA. So they said it would make it easier for families to get a court order allowing a student to play while a dispute is being resolved. Garrett said the bill is meant to clarify the legislature's intent when it passed the Choose Act in 2024, and that it does not prevent athletic associations from enforcing other eligibility requirements. Well, now that the AHSAA has made their mind.
Yeah, they changed the game.
They completely changed it.
They rigged everything up where, you know, I know it was a vote, and that was, you know, it was a vote. It wasn't necessarily a movement. But, boy, when they got a chance to vote these – and when you look at the people on that board, it's like nearly cafeteria workers, some of them. I mean, I don't know what the hell they're even doing on that board. But they were talking about statewide public and private athletics in the state of Alabama. And some of the people making these decisions were like middle school assistant principals. I don't want to get too far off because I don't have it in front of me. But it's just weird to me that they were able to make this decision. Here's the other thing. Unintended or intended consequence, I don't know which. And they don't give a rip now if people are recruiting, right? Private schools enticing people to come to their school, how much of that goes on. I think now they don't care because you're just playing each other. You're not even messing with the public schools, so you're not doing any harm to them, I guess they would think. But you may have a player they wanted, but you're not beating them with that player.
And does it matter to the recruits?
Here's who it matters to. The colleges. because these players, when they were playing, when St. Paul's was playing in 6A, they weren't winning all their games. Like in 5A, they were doing pretty well. They won state titles and things like that. But they were playing Biger, Williamson, you know, they were playing quality, some quality teams. Now they're not being tested by the same level of athletes, so you really cannot evaluate them the same way. So you have players who are, again, they're not playing the same level of competition. Therefore, if you're a college recruiter, you're not sure if he can cut it or not.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to be limiting scholarship availabilities or offers to kids who otherwise would be offered a scholarship because they would seal the deal with the way they played against real top competition.
Yeah.
If you're not playing top competition and you're just running roughshod over people or whatever, or if it's a stalemate, whatever, without playing the better teams, these kids are not going to be regarded with the same amount of athletic respect.
So it's possible a student who's really good athletically but also wants to go to a school that excels academically, mm-hmm. and if they can get both at a school like St. Paul's, mm-hmm. then if the fact that St. Paul's is now just going to play other private schools keeps them from going there, you could say that it's actually harming their education, that they're going to go to a school with less good
because they
academic.
They want to be seen.
They want to be seen.
Playing against good competition.
And here's the thing, too, is the AHSAA, I think so many of their rules are made with football in mind.
Okay.
Really, anyone around the state, they're thinking football when they're talking about competitive balance. But if that's the big gripe here, is competitive balance and that these private schools are able to out-recruit the public schools, and it's just unfair, then look at those state final scores in basketball. I mean, if you want to see competitive teams, how are 101-40 scores in championship games, how is that competitive? When you see a team like Hoover beating one of our local schools 41-7 at the half, where's the competitive balance there?
A team that had a great year.
Yeah.
There is no competitive balance there, and that's what Steve Mask was making that point in one of those articles. Now that he's no longer tethered to a private or public school, he said the recruiting goes on across the board. It goes on in private public schools as well. You have to have a voucher of where you live. What I don't know how they prove everything of a kid from a certain neighborhood, but you have some kids suddenly that. Some would say that the emergence of Mary G. Montgomery out in Sims is because they're now getting players that oftentimes went to Blount.
Hmm.
Well, Blount's gone down. Mary G.'s gone up. There probably is a line there of, between the two school districts or school systems, not school districts, where they're right on the line or kids are close. Well, with Mary G. not winning much, kids that were in either area, we're like more inclined to go to Blount.
Yeah, you'll go to whoever's winning, right?
Blount was winning, so you go there. And now with Mary G. beginning to kind of protect some of their assets, as in the players that they consider, look, you really should be in our school. But they had to kind of build a sort of program that attracted them there. And so Blount's the loser, Mary G.'s the winner. So in public schools as well, the ones that were crying about all this, they're doing the same thing.
Doing the same thing. And I guess I thought there would be more of a public outcry after the AHSA followed through on this reclassification, and we just aren't seeing it.
No.
And from the public officials who are supposed to be representing their constituents, I'm not seeing it. It sounds like they're just going to let things go the way they are. But again, the legislation that's getting set for a House committee vote tomorrow, I'm
with you. I really don't. It's a little late. It's like it doesn't really do anything because you're right. There's been no fight. There's been no pushback. Like Ham Barnett said I talked to him. I don't know if I had it on speakerphone or not, but I talked to him, like right after it all happened. And he said, so I don't know if you heard him say it to me, but he said, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I'm just a private school coach. You feel like you've been minimized.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, and these guys are competitive and they want to compete against the best teams, and now they're not being allowed. Well, again, you could play a team, but in terms of competing for a region championship, you can't.
Michael texting in, he says the private schools would be much better off to tell the AHSAA to kick rocks and just start their own thing. I disagree, Michael. I really do. I think that that competition between some of the bigger private schools and bigger public schools down here and across the state made everybody better, in my opinion. He also says also the recruiting aspect Dan is talking about isn't really applicable anymore with so many club programs and things like quarterback country. So I guess kind of like when you saw in basketball the rise of the
AAU and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, AAU and some of the off-season sports that they have. Another texter, transfers have had to sit out for 1 year for decades. CHOOSE Act is a great law, but changed the AHSAA bylaws that has been in effect forever. But how many of those schools were abiding by that rule? It sounds like there were some that were using loopholes to avoid having kids sit out a year.
You know, I was confused by it all. I saw a quarterback play for Baker in week one and play for Spanish Fort in week four. So you tell me he didn't sit out for a weekend.
No. Yeah, so no one was following that rule, it doesn't sound like. And then they wanted the private schools to do it as soon as this CHOOSE Act came in. Joel says, well, one good thing, they ain't going to worry about the cannon being messed with no more with McGill and Murphy's game sidelined. I would say maybe not because of that game, but I wouldn't expect the cannon to never be messed with again.
I thought that was a great tradition, by the way. I just thought that was a great tradition. And Murphy's, you know, they've lost the attendance. They've lost a lot of their athletes now. So they're on hard times with Sherman Williams. But
that's what would have made
day, it was a great rivalry.
That's what would have made the comeback so much sweeter, right? When they finally get back in
re-emerged.
The win column in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now they won't get the chance.
No. No. 852 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. And your thoughts on the text line 251-343-0106. Let her rip.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
856 FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Porchow on the way. He'll have Caroline Dobson, candidate for Secretary of State, in hour one. Lieutenant Governor candidate Rick Pate in hour two. Matt Gentry, who's running for Public Service Commission, place one in hour two. And then Will Hampson to break down all of these races, probably more of the national stuff. He's with P2 Public Affairs. Will Hampson joins Jeff in hour number three. Well, I know Dan won't be able to watch much of the basketball because he doesn't have the right channels, but I am all fired up and ready to watch.
Channel shaming me.
A bunch of basketball. The tournament's back. The upsets are inevitable. And Underdog is the best place to get in on all of the action. You can make entries and win money right here, right now in Alabama. Get the first four, which begins tonight. We also get Auburn and South Alabama to kick off the NIT later tonight. And I'm going to have the Underdog app open today, tomorrow, and the rest of the tournament. Playing on Underdog is easy. All you have to do is choose whether your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like points, rebounds, steals, and more. If you get those entries right, you could win up to 5,000 times your cash. So I've already been, you know, studying up on these games, seeing who I think is going to win. And with that, also some of the players that I think will have the best performances, and they will be in my Underdog entry. Download the Underdog app today. Use promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and you'll score $50 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code Dalton. Underdog. Make plays, win money. Must be 19 plus and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/ playing get terms _DFS_.html for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-MY-RESET or visit ncpgambling.org.
Big news, big interview tomorrow. We just got word on.
Yes, Silicon Ranch. We'll have a representative with the Silicon Ranch, the company that is wanting to put a solar farm in Stockton.
Yep.
And they already have plenty of solar farms set up around the United States. We'll talk with a representative from Silicon Ranch. We had a great conversation with Mike Tabb. The solar with the Integrity Energy Group to just tell us about the solar.
Yeah.
Had a great conversation last week with Megan Fowler, who has stopped solar in Stockton. Now we'll get the other side of the conversation.
Yeah, their side of the argument. 8:59, Jeff Porchow again is just minutes away.